Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time. Welcome to this show. Tonight I'm joined once more by Michael McNamara and Jason Clomies. We are going to talk about more of the behind-the-scenes kind of stuff before we get on to the roster and free agency a little later in this week. So the Hornets, of course, as all of you know, are NBA-owned. They have no ownership as of yet. However, despite all the doom and gloom and the CBA that's supposed to be fixing all the system issues and all the other horrible things that you hear about the Hornets regularly about how they're going to move, every single bit of information we've heard, and we have been talking regularly to people in the Hornets organization, has been generally positive, from ticket sales to ownership groups interested in purchasing the team. And in general, I just get a good feeling that the Hornets' future is pretty bright. So Jason, who is one of our two team members in New Orleans who has regular contact with the Hornets, take us up to date with what you've been hearing and what we kind of can expect here.
So immediately after the NBA took over the team from Shannon Schwest, I think the initial reaction was, this is bad, right? But immediately, good things started happening. There was a push, which some people didn't like, based on the benchmarks to try to get attendance up. And then that turned in, and that was met. The Hornets Business Council formed, businesses got more involved. That turned into a season ticket drive. That season ticket drive has been going through the summer, through the lockout, with the goal of trying to get to 10,000 season tickets. They're less than 400 season tickets away. At the last update that they had on their site, that is probably, you know, slightly better now. So they're going to get to 10,000. Go ahead.
And I want to say just, I mean, when was the last time the Hornets had sold 10,000 season tickets?
The last time they got to over 10,000 and they were between 10,500 and 11 was after the season following the second round appearance against San Antonio. That was their high water mark in season ticket sales. And they average above that, the actual attendance per game was close to 17,000, was over 16. So on top of that, they still had another 5,000 per game. And And these numbers that are reported that they put on their site are full season tickets. Those aren't season ticket equivalents. So the two halves that they sell aren't in there. The four quarters that they sell aren't in there. You know, those count for the attendance numbers that you see on ESPN, but that's not that full season commitment by one season ticket holder.
Wow. I didn't actually realize that.
Yeah, well, I asked a couple different people a couple different ways to make sure there was no possible way that my question was being twisted into some smiley face that shouldn't have been there. It's actually super positive news. I mean, it's frankly the pace is, and the fact that it's sustained and only dropped slightly during the lockout is kind of almost incredible. Like, I want to ask questions. You know, like how? You know,
right.
But they have those parties. They're, I'm assuming that now that the if this deal is ratified, et cetera, that the businesses are going to jump on board immediately and push us across 10,000 and beyond.
So yeah. When, okay, so a new owner is looking at this, they see, let's just say we get to 10,000 ticket sales, you know, in the next couple of weeks. What other factors, you know, what else is appealing about buying this team? Obviously, we know the new CBA will be more favorable to small market team. I mean, can you kind of tell us a little bit about the sponsorships and the new lease agreement?
Yeah, so the couple things happen at once here. And the common denominator to me is the money. So back of the envelope calculation says full season ticket equivalent is worth about, a thousand of them is worth about $2 million. One season ticket is about $2,000 and you average it all out. That's a direct cash payment from the consumer to the team, right? So they're up approximately, they're trying to get to about, you know, they're about $7 or $8 million a year in terms of season ticket sales as they were last season, right? Mm-hmm. Sponsorships are up by more than that amount already. So that was all done with Chevron upping their commitment, Entergy upping their commitment, and lots of smaller sponsorships. So really, when you look at those two things together, you're looking at $15 million more a year right there, already right. Committed. So the Hornets, I don't think we're ever that far in the red
right.
In the past few years. So automatically the team now, you're saying, well, wait a second, I've shifted the bar just on terms of efforts internal to the market here. I've already pushed this into the black and to the point where the variations that I've seen that were massive, right? Chris Paul writhing after that camera shot against the Bulls, I think,
mm-hmm.
And all of that. You're in the black that whole time. I think that's pretty appealing.
So we're looking at $15 million there. We're talking about more controlled spending because of the CBA,
yep.
Also revenue sharing, which we obviously don't have full details about. But if this franchise was worth 200, let's just cut it down the middle and let's say $300 million when the NBA bought it, what should it be worth now? With all the new improvements all around the board.
Yeah. So I was thinking that this thing would probably go for between $350 and $400 million. I think $350 is a more realistic number. It kind of depends on competition. I think there are going to be some more teams on the market. The Atlanta sale fell through, and Atlanta Spirit says, no, we're going to be owners forever. The team's on the market, right? That's going to tend to lower the sale price. The guy in Philadelphia, that little group that they formed who has recently been pandering to the Irving Folks, I think it was. You know, he's like, you know, once a Sixer, always a Sixer, and stuff like this. Like, who are you, guy? Right?
Oh, come on! You can't. You're calling that pandering to the Irving? That is, on if the Hornets went out and did that for one of my favorite Hornets, I would love it. That's not pandering. Okay, maybe it's pandering, but it's awesome.
It is awesome.
But, so just for anybody who doesn't know, Julius Irving was selling a ton of his memorabilia online, which may or may not have had to do with a bunch of bad business deals he had. Probably did. But the Sixers swooped in and bought a bunch of those lots and are now, you know, going to have them on display as part of, like, at the in Philadelphia. I think that's awesome.
I think it's great, but I don't think it's if this is what they're spending their time doing, they're just trying to make money and flip that. By the way, that investment group, their mission statement is basically to buy, you know, troubled businesses and sell them for profit. So, you know, I think that's another team that in the long run is on the market. You know, whether that affects a buyer who wants a team today, I don't know, but it might affect the guy who wants to say, well, look, I'll just wait 5 years. Yeah.
So, and you're in full support of the Hornets buying all of Kendall Gill and Kenny Gattison's game-worn 1993 Eastern Conference semifinal jerseys.
Absolutely. And I think they should buy one of those, like, little troll dolls and put a plaque under it and saying Muggsy.
Okay. All right, just making sure. And Tony Bennett sweatbands and okay.
Come on, are you actually comparing Julius Irving to Kendall Gill and Del Curry?
Oh, you want to throw Del Curry in there? Then yes, please.
To Julius Irving.
Yeah.
Dr. J.
Yeah, let him develop a consistent mid-range jumper and maybe I'll consider him.
Oh, right. I think the wheels just came off there.
So the lease that was extended, right, at the expense of the benchmarks being included,
right,
is expires at the end of this season or next season. So I
2014, I thought it was.
Yeah. So they have another year and a half, right? Right after this season, 2 years after this would be the last year.
This is a NASA mathematician for you folks. 2014 minus 2011, can't figure it out.
If these were letters, I could deal with them. The numbers, you know, calculators. I always do it 2 out of 3 times. That's true, by the way, for a number of reasons. But the the lease, you know, they're not just going to modify the lease to get rid of the benchmarks, but the ticket sales effectively end those, right? But I believe that a new lease is in the works and will likely be announced before the end of the season, maybe before the end of the year, depending on how things are happening. And the cable deal, this is the last year of the original cable deal. So that has to be in the works. You know, and now every cable provider in the area is on board with CST. So
right.
hopefully the terms won't change dramatically to start pushing people out of that. And then they've been saying getting DirecTV was a top priority. Back in the Jeff Bauer days, I was at a dinner. Jeff Bauer said at point blank, that's one of our top priorities. You know, still not there. And DirecTV has tons of problems with other channels as well, versus and things like this. So I don't know how that's going to happen. But the cable deal, this is only the second cable deal that this team has had here, right? So you know, hopefully it'll turn out a little bit better for them, and they'll get you know, a bump in their revenue from that too.
Okay.
I mean, well, just historically – I do want to point out that a bump in their revenue is probably a vast understatement. Historically, all of these agreements from local cable providers for local sports teams have been increasing by leaps and bounds. So I would expect, you know, a bump in the at least the 50% or more range.
I expect an increase of several million a year.
Okay.
And
so
then the lease modifications, you know, if they can get more money for parking, blah blah blah. You know, this is always another opportunity for revenue. So I mean, I think there's 20 million to the good for this team in terms of, let's say, from December of last year through the end of this season. You can see $20 million shift.
Okay, so David Stern has been quoted on multiple occasions saying that even before, you know, all of these things had come to fruition, obviously before we had the ticket sales that we have now, that there were several people interested in buying the Hornets. You know, he could have sold it, but he wanted to wait till after this deal. You've kind of run through all the things that make this team attractive to buy. So I don't think there'll be any problem getting an owner, obviously. And it's always been, at least Stern says so, his first priority to keep the team in New Orleans. I think that's going to happen. So let's flip the tables. I guess I would want to know from both of you, if you're sitting on the other side, you have a dozen applicants for this team in front of you. What kind of thing, and you have a guarantee that all of these applicants are going to keep the team in New Orleans. I guess what kind of things specifically would you be looking for in the next owner of the New Orleans Hornets?
Honestly, there has to be one extremely rich individual in the group. I mean, if you look at the history of the organizations that have ongoing trouble that aren't owned by Donald Sterling and are generally have a lot of issues with keeping, you know, a stable front office, it's those teams that are owned by a conglomeration of people, and there isn't really one strong central, you know, money man. Examples are Toronto Raptors. Example, even though the Hawks have done pretty well the past couple of years, it took them a long time to get to that point. There are a couple other teams as well. That Philadelphia was in that situation. And even Charlotte, Bob Johnson owned it, but he didn't run it. He let a conglomeration of minority owners do a lot of the work there. And that, of course, ends up with different people bringing in different people with different agendas. So you got to have, like, one pretty strong, centrally powerful money person, I would think. And, of course, I wouldn't mind a sugar daddy who wants to come in and buy the Hornets and be less annoying but just as spendy as Mark Cuban.
So we want to bitch and whine about how the small markets get the raw end of the deal, but the second we have a chance at a Mark Cuban and to be one of those obnoxious luxury tech teams, we take it.
Yes.
Oh, we're such hypocrites.
Yes, of course.
Jason, anything? What would you like to see, ideally?
I think what Ryan said is dead on. If I'm Stern, I want to look at what some of the smart people have said about the ownership group in the past. And I think it was Colangelo said, one difference is that some of these more successful owners just love basketball. They love the game. They love winning. They love competition. You know, they're in it. I think a legitimate interest, not just in the profits, but in what they do as a whole, is important. I mean, I think they really need to screen their owners better. I really do. And I would start today, and I would start with the team they own. I would set the example. I wrote a piece about it saying that I think the NBA buying this team and fixing it up and saying I can go get, you know, $10 million like that from the smallest market in the league that already has a sold-out NFL team, by the way.
Uh-huh.
if I can step in and do this with a hockey guy, right, then what are all you guys doing who are losing money?
Right.
And, you know, the difference is, you know, real, true commitment, you know, either to the city, to the game, something. You know, Sperling's is a sports guy, right? He's a lawyer, but he's been involved in that for years. He clearly loves competition, clearly loves the city, right? So I think you want that quality. And I think that's the final example you set for the rest of the owners with this gambit that he's pulling.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, he's talking about Jack Sperling, who is basically the controlling officer of the Hornets at the moment. What is his exact title, Jason? Do you know?
Governor.
What's that?
The governor.
Governor.
Yeah.
Governor.
Yeah. So he goes to governor's meetings, which is not something that all owners go to. No, really. I mean, you know, they're essentially the one representative.
Right.
They have. And so he was appointed by them to do that for them, as opposed to, you know, Hugh, who kind of runs everything. You know, he paddles, keeps the lights on and all that stuff.
And here's kind of where I think the rubber meets the road, or where be a little worried about this situation is, to me, I guess thinking a little bit too short term, but there is a short term versus long term battle. So if we got Ryan Sugar Daddy in here on December 7th, I think we would all feel a lot better, because, you know, if we had a guy that we knew was willing to spend, if we had a solid game plan going forward for the next 10 years, we know that this guy is going to be the owner, we know what his philosophies are, etc. I think we could go into this off season a little bit more aggressive. But as Jason pointed out, I think that the NBA needs to do their due diligence and get the right guy in here. That process could take months. If the Hornets don't have an owner till March, it might be already too late for the short term. I mean, we at that point, Chris Paul, David West, whomever could already be out the window. How do you kind of, I mean, how would you ideally balance essentially what's a short-term concern and long-term concern with those two issues?
I honestly don't see that as a huge issue for me, because, well, A, the Hornets are under the salary cap, which means they're already limited to how much they can spend, because when you're under the salary cap, you can spend up to the salary cap and then basically minimum contracts over it. So,
in exceptions, but yeah.
Yeah, and even the exceptions are limited by, you know, because the fact that you spend under the cap, so you can't even use all of them. So, I mean, really, the Hornets already have a spending ceiling this offseason, regardless of whether they have a sugar daddy or not. And
that's,
I
could come in and amnesty somebody, but okay, go ahead.
No. Well, Brian, the situation isn't as bad as all that. I remember the Heat looked like they cleared all their salary off, but with cap holds and everything, they were still over the cap from that point of view. That was how they were able to use the mid-level on Miller.
Yeah, but we're not in that situation. I think we're far enough below that even with cap holds, we're not over.
They were down. No, we still have David West.
Oh, yeah. David West is a $12 million cap hold. I mean, yeah, David West and Carl Landry's cap hold won't bring us over the cap.
And then you add in the mid-level you can use, the biannual if you can use it. And if all of that puts you over, you can still do your stuff. Now, you have to be careful when you renounce what, blah, blah, blah. But that Heat deal was a magnificent juggling act. So
right.
I think you're right that there is a ceiling, but that ceiling is a few minimums over the cap.
Right.
But we're talking about a sugar daddy. A sugar daddy could come in and amnesty people. He could throw a ridiculous contract at a Marc Gasol. He could do something. If that sugar daddy's in here somehow, some way on December 9th, I think Dell Demps is playing with different cards than he would be, you know, if that owner doesn't get in here until March or April. So,
yeah. You're right. And Dale Demps, I mean, he's already shown that he likes to maneuver around the edges because he hasn't been given a situation where he could make big moves at all. This will be his first chance. I don't think I really don't think, though, that he's going to be limiting his thinking, because he's going to want to prove that for the, I mean, here's the way he's got to think of it. Either a new sugar daddy or some owner is going to come rolling in, and he wants to be able to hand them a team that they like, so that maybe he gets to keep his job, because that is a danger that the new owner will come in and want to bring in, you know, his own basketball related buddies that he might know. But if Dell Demps can say, this is the team I put together and it's awesome, he's much less likely to lose that job. Or if he does lose the job, you know, those Philadelphia guys who just came rolling in, they might finally decide that, you know, Billy King should go, because, you know, he should have gone years ago.
Well, in terms of the sugar daddy, right? I mean, have you guys seen Fierce Creatures, the movie?
No, I can't say I have.
It's on my queue, though.
Okay. Well, it's pretty good. It's got the fish called Wanda Crew in it. But the guy comes in, and he wants to shut down the zoo because it's not making 10%, right?
Oh, God.
But the sugar daddy comes in, and what if we're not performing, right? I mean, the sugar daddy is also more likely to say, I can do what I want. I can move the team on a whim, stuff like this. The other thing is sugar daddy can set high expectations and excitement and therefore can let you down more, you know? I think a richer owner has a lot more potential, and it's probably a better gamble to take if you're Stern. But there's a downside, and more of a downside if you're a local fan.
So in other words, anyone listening to this podcast, you should really want a sugar daddy, but not a sugar daddy who's going to mess around with your stuff.
You don't want the richest owner.
Oh, I love it.
So before we got distracted by which owner our dream owner, who, by the way, is you know, an extremely hot and attractive woman as well. Is there anything else, any other news that you've heard or rumors that you've gotten your hands on while you've been talking to various people inside the organization that you wanted to let us know about, Jason, off here?
Yeah, you guys are talking about, you know, Dell Demps, what would he be able to do, restricted his thinking, all this stuff, right, depending on what the owner is. I think they've been going through this owner process for a year, right? I mean, I really think all the diligence that you're talking about, Michael, has been going on. And right. I think they're going to be in a position to move rapidly. I'm not sure what the speed of decision versus the speed of bureaucracy is, the speed of writing checks,
right.
the speed of getting butts into meetings, right? But if I'm Dell Demps, this is my first GM job, and I knew what I was getting into, right? If Dell Demps can come into this, he quelled the Chris Paul situation. Have we met our Chris Paul quota for this podcast yet? So he quelled the Chris
coming
Paul
Friday.
He quelled it last summer, effectively, very effectively, I think. And then he's had to deal with all this other stuff. I think the most relevant thing that you talked about, like just from talking with people, is I bumped into Dell Demps at a coffee shop. So I talked to him. And I try not to ask these people questions that, you know, have million-dollar bullets buried inside of them. So I said, you know, Dell, I see where you sit in the arena. You're always messing with your phone. So are you doing, like, scouting on the other team or what? He's like, most of it's trades, right? So I think whatever owner's going to come down, he's going to have a menu from top to bottom. He's going to just say, pick. What would you like to dine on tonight? You know, and the owner's going to pick, and he's going to go make it happen, right? And they might come back and say, "Oh, we're out of swordfish," right, or whatever. But you know, them's the breaks. But if I'm Dell, I mean, I can make my reputation among owners, among the people who have jobs, as the man from handling this the right way. And the dude is on it. I don't think I've ever seen him without his laptop or BlackBerry just to go on.
Yeah. He did bring us David Anderson.
That's right. and Jason Smith. So I just wanted to point this out. When I was so depressed, like, you know, back on, like, I think it was the 6th, that I went and pulled the game from last year.
Oh, God.
And it was the Miami Heat Hornets game, beginning of the season, is like game 5 or 6. I don't remember what it is. The Hornets were undefeated.
4.
And the our announcers were talking like Jason Smith was a god among men.
Yeah.
He came in, scored 14 points, had like 6 rebounds at halftime, and they were like, the new secret weapon for the Hornets, off the bench, Jason Smith, and they were all excited. It was. I just wanted to bring that up because I was cackling through the whole game as they just had such a good time with Jason.
No, it's true, mm-hmm. And if we didn't have the advent of video and scouting equipment, Jason Smith could have done that all year.
Well, I mean,
and now he doesn't even get the qualifying offer on his contract.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess to be fair, it was he and Willie for Brackens and Sungaila, right?
Right.
We won.
Yeah, we won that trade.
We won. I mean, we traded, you know, 2 paper clips for 2 pens, but, you know, you know, I mean, they're really better than that, but, yeah, it wasn't a blockbuster, you know, headline trade, but, I mean, we won substantially.
Guys, we're ahead of schedule. You know, our own free agents is tomorrow's podcast. I know it's hard once you get on Jason Smith to get off. That's what he said.
Right.
But we got to do it. We got to move on. Tomorrow it'll be all Jason Smith all the time, and we'll talk about the Hornets' 2 other free agent power forwards.
Yes, and I guess with that, You've brought our podcast to an end.
Yep, you finished it off.
Thanks everybody for listening, and tune in tomorrow to hear all about Jason Smith.
Bye.
Start your engines! Race on into Hy-Vee every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday all summer long and pick up a race day tailgate pack. Get an 8-piece bucket of Hy-Vee chicken or chicken tenders, party-sized Frito-Lay chips, and a 2-liter of Mountain Dew for just $10.45. That's right, race fans! Get an 8-piece chicken bucket, party-sized Frito-Lay chips, and a 2-liter of Mountain Dew all for just $10.45 every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday all summer long at Hy-Vee.